Autoguard detail report to starboard hangar bay.
Welcome to Pulse Rifles and Plasma Grenades.
Would you like to know more?
You know I have a shoulder on you, you know? And it must pop, pop, pop!
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. It's been probably a month, but we are following up with the remainder of the Miltech episode, and we have Nate,
Papa Bear,
Jay.
All right.
Did you say nay?
J-J-J-J. All right. So we're back. It's been a busy month or so. We've all been busy. Star Wars Celebration happened. We're not going to really talk about that today. We'll probably cover some of the new Star Wars stuff.
Not to say that we went or anything. It just happened.
No, I wish we did. Yeah. That would have been awesome.
But
there's a lot of good news out of there, though.
Us being veterans, none of us get paid that much.
I don't speak for yourself.
Yeah, I know.
We're all pointing fingers. All right, so I know you guys are pretty excited about doing drones because you guys both do a lot of drones in your hobbies and free time or work space. So I'll let you guys do opening comments. I mean, this is your bread and butter right here, the two of you.
Well, thanks for putting us on the spot. I wasn't prepared.
You weren't prepared?
No, right. I wasn't prepared.
All right.
You look prepared,
Jay. Well. Jay, no pressure.
You guys look fantastic in your Space Force hats.
Well, thank you. We do have matching Space Force hats, and
that's right. Thank you to Jay.
You're quite.
I do appreciate this, Jay. They're amazing.
Yes,
you guys look beautiful. You look beautiful. So, we've got a couple of show notes on robot submarines, regular drones, and pocket drones. But I figured maybe we could possibly start with a little bit of background on the two of your experiences. I guess Jay, you can go first. Talking about your personal experiences in the world of drones. I've really never touched them.
Sure. So my personal experience, I guess, started when I was about 6 years old. My grandfather, his whole life, flew radio-controlled airplanes, right? So when I was really young, he got me involved in that. We built a plane together from scratch, and he let me fly it around and everything, and I kind of just went from there. Eventually become a pilot and all that, but my love for flying radio-controlled aircraft never really went away. So when the word drone started entering the common parlance of basically anything that flew that you weren't sitting in, I took a little bit of offense to that because, in my mind, a drone was something that was able to control itself autonomously in some way, shape, or form and not require, you know, a dude on the ground with a transmitter in his hand flying the thing, right? But, you know, times change, and I guess I've evolved as well, and I'm okay with the word drone now, I suppose. But
yeah, it did kind of weird me out when I heard that same sense of logic. I'm like, that's just an RC aircraft.
Right. You know, it's like, hey, that's a quadcopter, or no, that's a radio-controlled airplane, or whatever. But now, you know, technology's caught up to the point where even commercial off-the-shelf drones, air quotes, even the commercial off-the-shelf stuff have a lot of baked-in autonomy. Whether it's autonomy for, let's say you want to shoot a selfie, you can tell the thing, hey, I want to shoot an aerial selfie. It will position itself and look at you and recognize when you wave your arms, and then it will shoot a selfie of you. It'll fly back in a particular pattern. It'll follow you as you're cycling down a trail. So I would absolutely consider these more modern commercial products to be more than just radio-controlled aircraft and actually entering into the world of drones. And you want to talk about some more personal experience. You know, I've done a little bit of this in my day job, not as much as I would like to, but I would say that the technology for military purposes has just increased exponentially over the last decade. I've got some facts and figures that I'll whip out later on that were just kind of mind blowing as far as, you know, investment by the government's concern in the world of drones. But yeah, it's absolutely sci-fi become reality in my mind.
Cool.
Oh, myself. So Papa Bear here. So my first entry into the world of drones is probably not an aircraft-based drone, but probably an exploring in my seventh grade science project in response to a car accident that a dear family friend of mine had gotten into for a science fair project. Again, I developed and submitted a autonomous car. It's completely self-driving car in which it would react and stop and drive across a predetermined path. Again, as it encountered unexpected obstacles and things along those lines, and as people would select where their destinations were, it would either encounter an obstacle and try to make itself perform detours and things along those lines. It would get there without any incidents. Unfortunately, I didn't win that science fair project, even though I was a couple of decades ahead of Google and all those pricks that decide to take credit for it nowadays. Whatever. Seventh grade Papa Bear was ahead of the game. He could have been the next, Elon Musk or fucking Bill Gates.
You are kind of musky.
I am a little... Shut up. But you know what? Hey, no credit due to me. You know who won that science fair? Somebody who wanted to try to play a violin with a sponge to see how it would sound different. Because I don't know how that applies to science or what the actual, application to the world would be.
He's not going to cure cancer with a sponge.
Yeah, you're not curing cancer with a sponge playing violin.
But you're curing it with an autonomous car.
Yeah, but hey, I'm actually saving lives with an autonomous car, which, by the way...
Keep you from drinking and driving.
Yeah, which, by the way, got into zero accidents, had zero incidents compared to the control group. But you know what? Sponge playing violins.
You don't sound bitter at all.
I'm not bitter at all!
I was going to say, I don't even remember the other science fair entries from that age.
Good
on you, man.
I didn't even place!
It's all right, man. Yeah,
it's over. It's past.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Show me on the doll where the science fair touched you.
No, don't. Don't.
I didn't even place, guys.
All right.
You know why? Because the people judging it didn't see the
utility.
They didn't see the utility. They didn't see how it was based in reality.
The raw genius.
They
didn't see the raw genius.
But no, they did not see how... They literally told me that there was no way people in the future would ever let robots or let autonomous cars be a thing. But somehow, sponges playing violins were okay.
Do I need to get you therapy?
Yes! No, I mean no.
Calm the spikes,
All right, I'm sorry. All right, I'm okay. All right, from there...
I'm sorry.
From there...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I just...
No, go ahead.
Are we past seventh grade now?
Yeah, I think he's past seventh grade.
No, did you have a question about Papa Bear? You had questions about seventh grade Papa Bear, Jay?
No. I was just saying if we're...
The genius that should have been...
What is
I'm
next?
I'm surprised you didn't turn into a mad scientist with as angry as you are.
What else?
The military must have calmed you down significantly.
The military calmed me down. From the military, I actually had some experience with drones. They actually, throughout the course of that, they actually had issued us a course of Ravens, which are some small man-pack drones. Of course,
like a 2-foot wingspan.
Yeah, they're relatively small. I don't know if I personally would really call them drones. Autonomy is rather limited. They are probably more akin in my mind to a radio controlled airplane more than anything else. They're light to any they're light and they do have
They're like micro predator drones.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't even go that far. I mean, they have some auto return capabilities and things along those lines on how you can make them recover and things along those lines. But that's about it.
I was more going along the lines. So you got your classes of surveillance. You got your surveillance or your armed drones. You've got your
for a raven.
Well, no, ravens aren't armed.
I was gonna say if you arm a raven, you might have a you might have a pea shooter.
You can put one bullet on there.
No, you're Yeah, you might have a Nerf dart if you're lucky. The thing is a Nerf dart.
No, what I was saying was it's in that class of surveillance drones that goes from the Raven. Well, actually, we'll talk about the micro ones here today, too. But the Raven up to the Predator size, big birds.
Yeah. From there, well, after I had gotten into drone racing and some surveillance drones and surveying drones, I should say. Both agricultural and construction-grade surveying drones. My day job actually has me doing some
work supporting job
that. There's some work with firefighting agencies and things along those lines.
Guys, your day job sounds so much cooler than mine. I just piss off general officers.
Yeah, I'm actually, I guess you could technically call me a professional racing drone pilot as well.
No, I'm going to call you a professional racing drone.
Don't call me a professional racing drone. But yeah, I am.
I don't think you could flap your arms hard enough to get off the ground.
I don't know. I might be able to. You'd be surprised. Mm. But, but yeah, I have won a few races that have paid, so I guess you could classify me as a professional.
Ooh.
So
we could be your sponsor.
Nothing big. Oh, yeah.
We could sponsor you in your next race.
You would have to pay me to do that. Sponsorship does include payment.
Oh. Well, you get a free sticker to put on your drone.
I like how you're thinking.
That's tempting.
I like how you're thinking.
But I do build them in my spare time, so yeah. Things along those lines.
Nice to have money to burn.
Yeah, most of that's done through...
I know.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, that's pretty cool. So you guys have a pretty heavy background on that stuff. I really have never touched it. I never evolved past the pine car Boy Scout Derby.
Pinewood Derby?
Yeah, the Pinewood Derby, that thing.
I was going to say, you have touched a drone. You've flown one around my house.
Yeah, and I... Miserably. It's a good thing for the Marine Corps that I was never a pilot.
Can somebody go on mute?
Yeah.
There's an old KGH reference, in case you didn't pick that up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yes,
good gentleman.
It's interesting you brought up the Raven. So last year, I worked with a team of interns to... develop an unmanned aerial system prototype for a competition that we had. And I can't go into too much detail. It is patent pending, by the way. We successfully filed a patent application about 2 months ago, I want to say. But we pulled a lot of data on the existing fleet of unmanned aerial platforms in the Army in particular, but across the DoD. And one of the things that we found out about the Raven, which was probably the nearest comparison what we could draw to what we had built, even though ours was a quad rotor, it was not fixed wing. But the Raven, when they deploy that system, it comes with three Raven airframes as a system, and two ground stations, and then all the peripherals that you need, and then logistics support. And that comes at the cost of, let's see, the system price is $280,000 for that. And per airframe itself is $35,000. So just for one Raven drone is $35,000. But to buy, the Raven, you got to buy the whole system, and that's $280,000.
So I have a question on that.
And I will tell you right now, they get really angry when you lose one.
Yeah, no kidding. And another issue, another issue with that platform is Papa Bear. I'm sure you've seen that they have a tendency to lawn dart into the ground. So the nose cone on that platform is particularly vulnerable to breakage. And when they break, you have to basically box it up and ship it back to the manufacturer, and then they ship you out another body. And that's part of their logistics support. So
I've seen a Raven before. They're not this radically fancy technology. Is there crypto built into it?
Well, I mean, there's some ComSec. You got to have some kind of resiliency and redundancy when controlling these things. But again, they're not the platform that's going out deep in country somewhere getting ready to launch a hellfire, right? They're just
designed for battalion.
Yeah, they're squad level.
Platoon commander says, hey, I want to see what's over that ridge. Somebody unpacks their Pelican case or whatever, puts their little plane together, boom, you know, off it goes. Current stable of UAS platforms that are out there, and kind of, you know, the mission set, as you touched on earlier, you're talking about the spectrum from pure surveillance at the lowest level all the way up to engage, right? Whatever engage might mean, you know, whether it's laser designation or what have you. And we have in the stable, you know, everything from small fixed wing to rotary to large rotary, right? They're even talking about modifying existing manned piloted aircraft and making them autonomous, not autonomous, but at least remotely controlled, right? So
you can't make the F-35 any worse.
Well, I was going to say, they technically already have that in some, not necessarily for warfare, but for testing purposes.
Yes. Yeah, to a certain extent, yeah.
Well, okay, so that, well, I guess I'll ask that question later, but remind me to get back to, I want to get the pilot's opinion on something later. Yeah, you and I have had this discussion before. I just think it's a good topic to discuss. But so we got a wide range of airframes. They haven't rolled out anything that's capable of picking up cargo yet, have they? I know they've been toying with that.
Either
medevac or actual like MRE delivery.
Yeah, I would say yes. So there's a...
Just like a Marine, thinking about his stomach.
Where's my MREs?
I need that pizza MRE.
I'm going to have my MRE. Who's feeding me?
So if you want to talk about like the MQ-8B Fire Scout, it's a rotary wing drone, right? So they have strapped things onto the skids of this. I mean, it looks like a helicopter just without a guy in it. They have strapped things onto it before. So yeah, I mean, you could say that they have the capability to drop off things or pick up things if someone were to run out to it and strap something onto it. But as far as whether or not that's actually being used today, I don't know. Couldn't say.
So really the only two uses are either weapon systems or surveillance right now.
Well,
something else that
there are other uses, but I don't know how much we go down that route.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of potential uses. I mean, if you think about it, just...
Well, no, there's practical and actual real-life current uses,
yeah,
but...
absolutely. I mean, so let's go back, for example, to the big wildfires in Northern California that just happened not too long ago. I mean, my parents live up there, and it was ridiculous, right? I mean, it still is. There's still displaced people living in FEMA trailers. A lot of information can come out of putting an unmanned platform up, right? Or you want to say a swarm of unmanned platforms that just go out, right, and start collecting thermal data, right? Look at where the hot spots of the fire are, and that can help the firefighting effort, because you may not want to put a fire spotter up in a helicopter, you know, what was what they do now, right? You may not want to put a human being up in a helicopter if the conditions are too windy, too hazy, too smoky, but you might be willing to lose a couple of cheap expendable drones.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of utility in the fact that you can do spectrum analysis, geological surveying. You can do things along the lines of law enforcement actually can use them a lot in the spectrum analysis of, actual crop plantings, in the fact that you can actually see see what actual spectrum the light being reflected off of certain crops are.
Cocaína.
Cocaína, marijuana.
Nobody cares about the marijuana anymore.
No, I mean, sometimes.
Asparagus.
Because, you know, even...
asparagus.
Well, you know, that's the other thing, too, is...
illegal asparagus right there.
To actually see what crop yields are, they can utilize them for tax purposes as well. to see what, yeah, because you can actually crop, you know, calculate the expected crop yield of a certain square footage of field and things along those lines.
So you're telling me the IRS is out there right now trying to figure out how much?
No, that would be the Department of Agriculture, my friend.
Ooh.
And things along those lines. Or like I said, certain law enforcement agencies worried about, you know, drug enforcement and growing, you know, certain cash crops of drugs, poppy fields, and, you know, marijuana.
Or
cocaine,
the state of Maryland worried about how much rain you're getting.
That's very true, too, because they do have the rain tax, for those of you not in the know.
Are you kidding me?
No, no.
God, I hate Maryland.
But, yeah, the GPS has gotten so advanced on drones and their global positioning referencing. You know, like I said, doing the construction surveying and things along those lines, people can actually, you know, hire out a drone survey company from overseas to monitor the progression of how far a construction company is, you know, progressing on a contract from overseas. They just send up a drone, run a 3D, run a pattern over a construction site. They can then take that back, run it into a 3D rendering program, and actually show an overseas company how far a construction project actually is physically on site.
You know, I'm just grateful I live in a state where I have 500 feet above my residence considered my personal airspace, and I can take down anything within it.
That is not true.
I was lied to.
That is total bullshit.
I'm still shooting down anything over my house.
And then you would be charged.
No, I will not be charged. I got good lawyers. I'll find good lawyers. All right. Okay. So those are some of the uses.
Actually, there's a ton of laws out there on where you can and cannot fly drones.
I know the Pentagon's a no-fly zone.
Well, yeah, anything over a military installation is a no-fly zone. Anything over a national park, fish and wildlife, anything that is like national, you know, a national. Some national forests are okay. Anything that'll, you know, anything managed more or less by the DOI, the Department of the Interior, is going to be a no-go, just because they manage large tracts of protected wildlife fields. Anything within 5 miles of
she's got huge tracts of land.
Yeah,
she's beautiful. She's rich. She's got huge. Tracks of land?
Huge tracts of land. Anything within 5 miles of an airfield, like I said. Anything over a school is also a no.
Really?
No-go. Yeah.
Don't schools have drones? I've seen schools prisons. Fly drones.
You can't.
Prisons are also a no-go.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't want people
anything dropping. Anything managed actually by the federal or most state. I would almost assume all states. I have not done the research into all state laws, but I would assume that all states have similar laws about their state prisons, as well as cities.
Speaking of which, did the FAA? I heard the FAA for a while there. They were saying anything over pocket size basically had to get registered with the FAA.
That actually has been rescinded.
And yeah, so that is what I heard. So you do not have to. Is there any regulation to register with the FAA?
Anything over there is a certain weight limit that has to be registered. Most of the personal drones are okay, but again, there is a weight limit. I would recommend, depending on when you're listening to this, because laws do change quite often, especially since drones are a very new technology, and I say that, you know, relatively, that, you know, the laws around drones have changed quite a bit over just the past few years because people are still trying to figure all this out. Check the laws before.
So did they rescind it because they were just getting a bunch of asinine, or was they were overwhelmed with the number of registrations, or was it somebody just like, this is ridiculous?
No, yeah, well,
do you know why they rescinded it?
I do not. I mean, I don't know if there was a whole lot of utility for it. I do know that there are regulations on between flying for personal use versus flying for commercial gain. If you're flying for profit, there are definite additional restrictions or definite additional regulations that you need to follow versus flying for recreation. Like if you're going to post it for YouTube and monetize that video for any way, in any way, shape, or form, use it for advertising in any way, shape, or form, you are going to fall under you are going to need to get a 107 license. I believe that's I believe that's the correct licensing term. You are going to need to get
it's a FAA Part 107. And that's separate from drone registration. You don't have to register unless it's 55 pounds.
Thank you.
Which is pretty damn heavy.
Yeah. And again,
well, wouldn't that be most camera, like the heavy duty HD camera rig ones? Like the ones they use for like professional movie?
No, most of those are under 55 pounds.
Yeah. Those are, you know, the unique like quad or octocopter types. I mean, my little guy has a 4K camera on it.
Yeah.
You know.
Some of mine do as well.
And then, I mean, it's I don't know how much it weighs. 3 pounds? It's tiny.
I was going to say most of mine weigh under a pound. Of course, a lot of mine are geared for racing, but I do have quite a few with 4K cameras that are more than capable of, you know, I forgot what I was going to say.
Photography.
More than capable
so
of doing.
So how many do you have?
A lot.
Are you really going to make me count them right now?
Okay, how many does he have, or how many does he have for work?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, like 10, 12?
Nice.
So speaking of cameras and high-definition stuff, so the Army has been developing a pocket-sized one that's really tiny. I mean, it doesn't look much bigger than maybe if you took two big old fat pens and markers and stacked them together. A little copter-looking doodad with a FLIR camera on it. It's called the Black Hornet, and they got a $40 million contract to this company, and it's only 6 inches, a little bit over 6 inches, and it weighs 1.1 ounces. It's a nano UAV, and they're just going to carry it in their pocket, and they're going to use it for small level surveillance. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I got a ton. So one of the class of drones that I have experience in flying is called the Mini Whoops.
Whoops.
Yeah, they're called Mini Whoops. It's actually a manufacturer name. They are extremely tiny. They're they're classed in 65 to 75 millimeter sizes. That's the palm size one I let you fly around my house that one day. Do you remember?
You mean the one I crashed around your house?
Yeah. So generally they're generally they're fairly highly responsive, because again, the one you flew was a racing drone. Can you describe your experience in flying it?
Man, it was worse than my, I don't know. I felt like I was drunk, man. I didn't really understand how to work it. And then I tried doing the headset, like the ocular headset thing.
So you were doing a first-person view type?
Yeah, that was messing me up, because I was not familiar with the joystick control on the handset you had there. It was interesting. I mean, it's nifty. I don't have the resources, the funds to start pursuing it as a hobby, but it certainly was.
Well, we're not talking about that. We're just talking about the actual experience in flying.
I you know what? It was weird. I took some getting used to. I'd say I was better towards the end. I only messed around with it for about 20 minutes. And at the end of the 20 minutes, I was starting to kind of get the hang of it. If it was something I did on a regular, I think I'd probably be able to get the hang of it. But it wasn't super intuitive right off the bat.
Right. So what they are actually proposing is not a quadcopter. It is actually a classic copter from the shots that I've seen of it. So again, it could be a world of difference. The Mini Whoops, in the iterations that we've flown them, are actually quadcopters, and again, they're built for racing, so they're highly responsive. They can actually do kind of what you would think of drifting. If you've ever seen Tokyo Drift and things like that, so they can do really high speed corners and things along those lines. They have a medium to fair video camera.
I'm just kind of waiting for the day where we got something that's like the size of like a hand grenade or a baseball, and you just chuck it in the air and it takes off on its own when it hits its apex, and then does its own little reconnoiter, and I don't have to do anything and just get the feed.
Well, those will do it, sort of. Not really. Ever.
That's pretty much what the project was we did last summer, and it was fabricated via additive manufacturing, aka 3D printing.
Nifty. Was it plastic or metal?
Plastic. ABS. But that was our prototype. We were looking at nylon.
I'm
and
sure the motor was metal.
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, it was off-the-shelf motor, propellers, electronics. We bought a GPU that's the size of a credit card from NVIDIA. It's called a Jetson TX2. Really, really cool computer on a chip, basically. Did a lot of high-end machine learning type stuff on that card. And then the avionics were just off-the-shelf stuff that a lot of people listening to this would be familiar with. The Pixhawk type avionics. So, but yeah, I mean, that literally was what it was. A guy could take it out of his pack, assemble it without tools, throw it up in the air, tell it, find me all the red cars in a 5-mile radius. And it would go around and send back locations of all the red cars in a 5-mile radius.
That is nippy. So the other thing we had in our notes was so not all drones fly. The Navy's working on some submersible ones.
Yes.
Go back. There's still other uses. Oh. So one of the other big uses of flight drones right now that they're looking at is actual rescue operations.
Medevac, Kazivac, so.
Talking about cataclysmic events inside cities.
Oh, so searching for survivors.
Yeah, let's say parking garage collapses or something along those lines. You can actually, if there's large open spaces or something along those lines, or abandoned buildings, that it could be a hostile territory. There's a hostile actor, active shooter type event.
Or even just environmental factors.
Yeah. Something that's got some of the acrobatic drones that they've got. Whether mini whoop size, like again those small 65 75 millimeter size, all the way up to you know some of the more classic 110 or larger, the 6 to 5 inch drones. You know,
you're going back and forth between metric and English here.
I'm sorry. It's not English. It's imperial.
Stick with the American measurements,
please. American. All right. Well, the 6 and 5 inch or whatever.
Are we talking props, or are we talking the actual size of the frame itself? When you give me a measurement, are we talking prop size for the rotors, or are we talking size of the actual?
Well, when I'm talking, when I say the 6.5 inch, I'm talking about the rotor size.
Okay, so not the device itself.
No, it's a diagonal distance of the front left, back right.
From the left rotor to the right rotor. He's actually gonna go grab one.
Shame this isn't a video. Banging around there. So, well, while he's not here, I got a question for you. So we had this discussion quite a few years back, and I'm curious as if your feelings on it have changed there, Jay. So you were a combat pilot.
Yes.
For the record, you flew Cobras.
Yes, Your Honor.
You shot stuff.
Yes, Your Honor.
A lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. What's your feeling about, manned close air support? Versus unmanned close air support.
Yeah, so
the lethality of a drone versus lethality of an operator that's right there on the scene.
Yeah, so I think that there always needs to be a human in the loop, right? And some people will say, well, there's a human in the loop, right? If you've got a drone, but if you've got some Air Force dude sitting in Oklahoma with a kill decision. On a combat zone in the Middle East, I think that they might not have the situational awareness that's required, right? But I will say that if that individual is pulling the trigger on, let's say, launching a Hellfire missile that, where the target has been laser designated by somebody on the ground that does have that situational awareness, now you're not talking about the kill decision being with the operator in Oklahoma, you're talking about the kill decision being with the ground force commander, right? And they're designating the target. They've done their positive ID. They've done their collateral damage estimate. They've done everything they need to do to make sure that decision is the right one to make, right? They just don't have the button to push to launch the ordnance downrange. So I think that, from my perspective, being in the situations that I was in, you have to have a human being that is aware of what's going on, aware of the target, who can positively identify the target, who can do an estimate of collateral damage and make that decision, be willing to put their name down and say, yep, I made that decision for good or bad, and they'll take the responsibility for it, good or bad. I think that if we move towards autonomy to the point where we are identifying targets autonomously is where we're going to run into a lot of trouble.
Oh yeah, I want to talk about that when we get to the robots. But I was
going to say, I stepped out for a minute. Are we talking about Skynet?
No. So we didn't go down that road yet, and that's another thing I want to talk about later when we talk about robots, true robotics. Jay and I had a discussion quite a few years ago when we were working up in the Puzzle Palace about the feeling about I guess you got three different situations, and that wasn't a slam on the Air Force. I'm sure it was just, we know that there's a lot of Air Force guys operating drones that are doing strikes and stuff, but there's a lot of good Air Force pilots out there on site doing CAS too. But the question was, what were the feelings of a combat pilot in regards to being on site to make that decision, that life or death decision for the objective, the target. Then you've got the situation where you've got a drone operator who's got people on the ground lasing a target, making that decision. And then you've got the situation where you've got a drone pilot operator and whoever's got, their finger on the button being 2,000 miles away and not having any sort of on-site human decision point. And, Jay and I had a good discussion about it a few years ago. I figured I wanted to see either if his thoughts on the matter changed. And even if they didn't, I still wanted to get it out there for the audience because I figured it was a good discussion coming from somebody who actually was out there putting 30-millimeter rounds on target.
Woo, 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 woo. That's Army there, devil.
Oh, I'm sorry. We get 25? 20, huh?
Oh, that's
sorry. Cute. I would never operated.
That's all we needed. 20. They were like exploding beer cans.
I guess the 30. Okay, so the 30-millimeter Avenger.
No, 30 is the A10. Yeah, 30 is A10.
So you were on 20-millimeter. I hate 20 millimeters. 30 millimeters, still dead.
Let me sing you the sound of
that's
my people.
That's a lot of hate and discontent, regardless of which platform. Oh, we got the 30-millimeter Bushmaster on the freaking track, but yeah.
So yeah, it's okay. So most of the time.
Oh, so Papa Bear went and got one of his drones.
Yeah. So a lot of times, most of the time, the actual airframe.
Showing off the toys here. That's a nice looking. That's a nice looking one there.
Oh, very nice. So most of the time, the airframe for racing drones and acrobatic drones are described in millimeters, at least in the U.S. I don't know if we have any international listeners. And the prop size.
We actually do.
Are described in inches. So the 5-millimeter or the 5-inch prop is very bitey and very acrobatic and very fast.
Mm-hmm.
The 6-inch props are much smoother and will give you a much smoother and much mellower ride. You can't bite into the air quite as fast, but.
And these are all plastic, because metal ones would take somebody's head off.
They will. Well, the plastic ones will go to the bone too if you try to catch it.
Are the military drones plastic blades or are they metal blades?
No, it's all.
Are they ceramic?
As far as I know, it's all plastic.
Well, no, the bigger one. It depends on the size.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, yeah. If you're talking about a bigger,
like a Predator or something big.
Well, the biggest ones have jet turbine engines.
All right. So did you have anything else you wanted to talk about on the before we go under the sea? Under the sea.
Yeah.
Share with us.
That's fine.
No, you have a funny look. The Global Hawk is a Rolls-Royce jet engine.
Yeah. I was going to say, I would love to talk about the Global Hawk because, man, the Global Hawk is just amazing.
And talk. Keep it unclassified, but talk away.
No, just the fact that it's amazing and beautiful and giant.
It is ginormous.
Actually, I think I have seen that in, like, the Air and Space Museum. Don't they have one of those in the Air and Space Museum? Like a mock-up?
I don't know. They have one hanging at the airport here in town.
I'm pretty sure the Smithsonian has one. It's got, like, a air intake on the front, on the bottom.
Yeah.
No, there's a scoop on the top, and the front of it is this, like, big bulbous thing. Like, looks like the head of a whale or something. And there's a scoop on the top.
It does. That, you know, it's funny you say that because that's exactly what it reminds me of. Is kind of like a beluga or
sure like a porpoise's head.
Like a porpoise's head, yeah, exactly.
Not to be confused with a dolphin. Porpoise with a
porpoises have the big bulbous head as opposed to dolphins, which have much more streamlined. Yeah,
There it is, folded up.
Oh. Hey, you stick that in your cargo pocket.
So Jay's got the DJI Pro 1.
Mavic Platinum Mavic Pro, Pro, yeah. It's fun.
I have one of mine is the DJI Air. Yeah. It was like their second generation just before the DJI Pro 2 came out. And before they found out that the Chinese manufacturer, which is DJI, you know, was, you know, embezzling like more than $100,000 of profits between their employees and things along those lines. It was a massive, massive
scandal
within their.
Did they stop making drones?
No, but it definitely shows some corruption within their company and made them kind of question.
Isn't that part of like the Pan Pacific Sino culture? Is because like didn't all the Korean companies get in trouble for money, for dirty money, and then they're like, oh, it's just part of our culture.
I don't know. Let's move past this. We're probably not gonna be able to use that.
Yeah, let's just get down and racist with it.
Yeah. No, fuck them people. That was the argument they made.
All right.
Let me sing you the song of my grandfather from World War II.
Hey, if we want to talk about Afghan and dirty money and tribal leaders. Okay, so we're back on track after that deviation there. So did you have anything else you wanted to talk about from the air side before we go under the water?
Not unless we want to talk about how I did I built a long pass drone.
Well, go ahead and tell us a story. That's a lot of juice.
Was that your 8th grade science fair project?
No, that was actually
9th grade. It was 9th grade.
That was actually like last year or the year
before. That is awesome.
Yeah, so we built, it was kind of a project amongst, it was a forum group, and we got together the funds and we built up an autonomous drone just kind of as a side project, in which it was a fixed wing project, put some basic programming into it, you know, bought some avionics off of a website that's pretty popular. It's a Hong Kong based website, I believe, kind of similar to, you know, AliExpress, you know, called Banggood. I know, I love the name. But you find a lot of drone parts and things along those lines, or imitation drone parts off there, and a lot of electronic parts and whatnot. But we built it, so basically we set it to manual takeoff and things along those lines, so it could call back to base stations. And that's when we started to lose signal. We lost total signal, good communications, which is pretty impressive, but it got all the way out. We had the autopilot take over completely, and it went to a midway base station, which somebody took over control and flew it, redirected it to the next way station, and we were getting telemetry the entire way back, and it was communicating to a proxy server, so we could all see it, you know, more or less real time. And so when we got to the last way station, you know, he could bring it in for a landing and let us know that, you know, we all got it. So, but it was great, because the entire time we were outside of communication range, the thing was doing self-correction and everything all on itself, based on this really, really wonky code that we had written. Because we did it all from scratch. We didn't want to use anything that was pre-done. We were doing things kind of way outside of how things are normally done. I don't really want to go into how we did everything 100%, because we were kind of experimenting a little bit. But It was a really neat project, but overall that thing definitely made some mileage, and it was kind of impressive because we didn't expect it to make it 100% of the way, based on battery life alone.
So there was battery? You didn't run that thing out of gas?
No, that was 100%
battery. And you got how many kilometers out of that?
I'd have to go back and look.
Did
exactly.
It stop to recharge? Or swap
no,
batteries?
No, we did have solar on there to give it a passive charge back, but it wasn't enough to give it really a ton. I mean, it was almost enough to give the cell phone a little bit of extra juice, and you know, enough to, you know, repower some of the onboard you know, computer, but not really enough to really repower the engine, or, you know, the motor or anything along those lines. So we weren't getting it, you know, enough juice back, you know, enough amperage or anything along those lines back to really redo those. The amperage was only enough to really, you know, recharge some of the avionics.
That's still really
impressive.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
a long
that
haul.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it was kind of a fun thing to do, not really any real point to it other than just to do it.
But typically, I mean, you're not going to, on battery power, you don't generally get very long on station time like that. That was impressive.
Yeah, you can. I mean, again, long haul, there's guys out west that do long haul, you know, RF, FPV flights and things along those lines. First person view type flights, just to see how far they can get there and back. And they can get, you know, 80 plus. You know, kilometers.
So how were you able to fly? I mean, where did you launch from? Because there's that whole exclusion zone issue, airspace.
Yeah, I mean, I was outside of it.
Okay. Oh, then you're if you were outside the exclusion zone, then you're fine. It's just the 70 kilometers bit. I mean, anybody who's ever flown an aircraft or a remotely piloted aircraft will recognize that that's a pretty awesome feat.
Distance. Good to go.
I will say the wind was on our side.
So you just got really lucky.
No, but I mean, I will say that if the weather had been bad, we probably wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, that's a fair bit. Okay, well, that was pretty cool. So that was pretty interesting. What about the other thing we talked about, all aircraft, and we did not touch off on the Navy's submersible drones.
So I will say this, I built a submersible drone too.
Me too. In
awesome.
College.
2 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh yeah, that's right. You have told us about
well,
that.
Well, you were a squid, sort of.
Sort of. I went to the squid school.
You did go to squid school.
You know what? I went to squid school once too. You want to hear my story?
Is it calamari related?
No, but I do have one of those too. Was that a tentacle porn
reference?
Oh!
There it is.
We're waiting for it.
Every stinking episode.
Every episode. Only because it bothers you.
Well, it didn't make it into the kid episode.
No, it didn't. Well, that's appropriate. It's all right. We'll work it into the show notes on the actual website.
If you reference a Japanese cartoon, that's close enough.
Yeah, we did talk about Robotech briefly. no tentacle porn there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
So, submersibles. Which one of you guys is going to tell your wild submersibles?
I don't want to tell any stories, but I will say that the main difference, the main thing you have to take into consideration with a submersible is that you're in a GPS-denied environment. GPS radio waves will not go under the water. So.
And inertia.
Yeah, so when you talk about underwater navigation autonomously, you have to take a lot of things into consideration, like inertia. How do you measure that? How do you track that? How do you filter the different input signals that you're getting and turn that into a signal to steer the vehicle?
Okay. So you were able to do that quite a few years back.
Yeah, so my senior year at the Naval Academy, I was part of an autonomous underwater vehicle development team for an intra-college competition. And it was cross-disciplinary. They had different engineering majors. And then I was the computer scientist on the team. So I had to develop the code that processed the different signals that were coming in from the sensors and turn it around and create steering commands, basically, for the vehicle.
It's really cool.
So I built one with my kid, and I will tell you this: you know, it was a fun project, but again, I did it mostly as a hobby base thing. But I will say this: we did get a little bit overboard with it, and we have taken it quite a few places. But the
overboard, did you violate international waters with it?
Not quite yet. but the thing is with
with underwater drones, you know, a lot of times with aerial drones and things, you know, you have, like Jay was saying, you have GPS, you have visual, you have a lot of things, a lot of referencing that you can do outside of the drone itself. With when you're underwater, you're, number one, radio signals, like you said, are not going to penetrate in a lot of ways, so you have to overcome that unless you're doing some ultra low frequency type type transmission. I don't know if you went that route, Jay, with yours, but we did, you know, doing personal type drones, you are limited in the amount of transmission that you can do, so you can't really penetrate the water. Water is a natural RF signal blocker. You can't penetrate the water with a lot of, you know, radio frequency, unless you're doing the ultra low frequency type deal, which is, a lot of it is banned for
non-submarine
military use.
And no, you're not getting a lot of data rate over ULF.
No, you're not. So that, not only that, but, you know, like we said, inertia is another thing. You know, when you're cruising along in the water, that water tends to, you know, number one, you have currents just like in the air, but it'll carry you a lot further, a lot faster. You don't have any way to tell where you are because you don't have the GPS to tell you that. Buoyancy, salt water and fresh water, and just the fact that you are in a different part of a river, lake, you know, bay or whatever, will have a different buoyancy than you actually would in a different portion of that same body of water.
The temperature, the salinity, all that impacts it. Yeah.
I mean, the deeper you go, the buoyancy will change. So your drop weight will, your drop rate will change a lot faster than you would, you know, in different areas. So, I mean, there's a lot of considerations. There's a lot more complications that go into, you know, submersible drones than you would have necessarily in aeronautical drones. Aeronautical drones, yeah, you're going to have less wind resistance the higher you go up. But if you're talking about commercial drones, or, you know, a lot of the drones that we're using nowadays, you're not really having a lot of those types of those engineering problems, at least not that I'm really experiencing in the commercial side of things, that you would as fast as you would within the nautical side of things.
Okay, interesting. So, any final comments on drones before we move on to robots, which are...
You said Roomba a second ago.
Roomba!
You want to talk about drone vacuums.
Drone vacuums? Did you hear about the Roomba that got the police called on it?
Yes, the shadow was passing under the lady's door.
They called the cops because they thought somebody was in their bathroom. Turned out to be a Roomba. Like, the SWAT team was called in. There's video. It's great. The SWAT team's like, come out. And they end up going in. I'll throw the link up in the show notes, but it was pretty funny. They bust on in, and all the cops just start dying laughing. They're like, it's a freaking vacuum.
So
that poor Roomba.
I will say my Roomba
with a criminal record.
I will say my Roomba. I do paste the googly eyes.
So
on nice my Roomba. So it does look suspect.
I have a question, because you have a weird step in your house.
Yeah.
Does it just fall off the ledge when it comes down here?
It doesn't. It detects the step and it says, "Oh fuck no,
I'm not going down there."
Nah, I'm not.
So you actually have to pick your Roomba up to vacuum multiple rooms.
Yeah.
That's okay. Interesting. All right, so robotics.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
It's interesting.
You got the shitty robot. It can't even go down a step.
It doesn't have legs. It can't climb.
You gotta move it around. You gotta move it 6 inches. What a hassle!
Hey, look, I have no robots in. I have no robots in my house. When the robot uprising happens, I will be safe. Okay, yeah. I won't have drones attacking me. I won't have my toaster will not try and kill me.
I'm really scared of a vacuum.
I know.
When are we going to tie this into sci-fi?
I don't know.
I did at the very beginning.
So robotics. We did. I at did. The very beginning.
Did we?
Yeah. So robotics in the battlefield. Yeah. So now that we
T-1000.
Yeah.
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
Let's graduate. Yeah, we're not quite there yet. Let's graduate from drones, which army of
none.
Army of none. Oh, army of none. Army of none. That's a book. Autonomous weapons in the future of war. Who wrote that?
Amazing, amazing book. A guy named Paul Scherrer. S C H A R R E. You want to talk about autonomy in combat? You want to talk about where the DoD has been and is going?
So robotics is okay. So robotics. How would you? Where would you draw the line between drones and robotics? Is the Mars rover a robot or a drone?
Well, I think that's like asking, is you know, an apple? And is it an apple or a fruit? I mean, yeah. I mean, I think the question is a little bit moot, right? Because
it's like porn versus art. You know it when you
see
it.
Well, no, I mean it's not. I don't think there's a difference, right? I think the term robot is anything that's automated, right? So you could have a robot that's nothing but an application on your computer that responds to people in a chat window, let's say. That could be a robot. In fact, we have products out there that are sold as robotic process automation, and that's what they do. They're chatbots, or they perform repetitive tasks, and it's purely an app on a computer. It's not necessarily a thing that walks around and does something, right? So,
or we have apps that people call AI, but they're not really AI. Siri is not really AI.
True.
Cortana is not really AI.
True.
Google Assistant. What's the other big
one? They're not AI, but there's a subset of AI called machine learning. And all of those assistants are trained machine learning models, basically. And they use techniques, not just speech recognition, but also natural language processing techniques, right? Where they can kind of filter what you're saying intelligently with a little bit of context behind it.
So the new Merriam-Webster
definition. I don't believe in that.
Yeah, neither do I.
Fake news.
Well, I mean, the thing is they have redefined this quite a bit from where it has been, but the new definition is a machine that resembles a living creature in being capable of moving independently, as by walking or rolling on wheels, and performing complex actions such as grasping and moving objects.
Okay. Well, that's great, but I will tell you that in practice,
it is. I'm not saying I disagree with you, Jay. You don't
like no, me. I'm just saying that, you know.
Papa Bear approves of the Jay. Okay.
So robots in combat.
Yeah.
I know for a long time Boston Dynamics was developing their dog.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real here. They redefined fruit and vegetables from when we were kids too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I and the millennials are ruining this country.
Ah, millennials.
Oh wait,
who are you mad at?
Oh, wait, I recently found out I'm defined as a millennial.
Too. What?
You are, unfortunately, I'm the cutoff for Gen X. He's too young.
Yeah, I'm apparently 2 years too young.
So Gen X. Yeah. So Nate, are millennials too old for you to date now, or too?
Am I still dating younger than you?
No, it's not criminal.
Unless you were,
it's legal. No, this is not Alabama.
That's still illegal here, but age of consent here is 16.
Yeah. Internet, what?
Don't get so excited. He's like, I'm reload. Are you hiring?
I'm moving. Jay, you got an extra room?
I'm not.
News at 11.
I was surprised it was 16 anywhere in the U.S. I knew the United Kingdom was like that.
That's 16 here, parental consent.
So,
kind of parent would consent to that.
Robotics in the battle space. Some of the big projects that have been in the news that people have seen are the Boston Dynamics dog. There was the mule that was really loud, and the reason it never went anywhere is because while it was functional, it was a diesel engine, and it was too frickin' loud for the combat space.
I just imagine rolling into a war space, all stealthy like
steampunk.
Yeah, roll out.
like that. What was that really bad Western-ish movie with Will Smith? It was all like steampunk.
Wild West.
Oh, that was the name of the song.
Jim West.
apparently the steampunk crowd was very angry that they got that movie and what was the one about the moving cities, the rolling cities that stunk up at the box office so bad most people didn't even realize. Mortal Engines.
Mortal Engines.
Yeah,
that was tank. Rolling Cities.
Yeah, they were rolling cities.
Yeah,
cities
so
on
the big cities would eat the little cities in order to take up their resources.
Made no goddamn sense.
And then there were sky cities.
What?
But the reason that they all did this was because the tectonic plates were in constant shift and causing.
But there were still some real cities, from what I've been led to believe.
Yeah,
in
there were still real cities.
Greenlit that project?
The books were apparently really good.
Peter Jackson.
Ugh.
But they tried to fit the entire series of books in one.
So kind of the opposite of what Peter Jackson did with The Hobbit, then. Stretch one movie out into one book out into
6 hours.
It's like, well, you know, I know I made this mistake.
Actually, he started it apparently and abandoned the project and left it to his like special effects guy who had no directing talent, and that's where that came from.
But there were a ton of special effects.
It was beautiful, but all right. So back on track. Any robotics in the battle space that you guys want to discuss?
Yeah, I would say the first practical application that I know of that I've seen is EOD. What was that?
I was gonna say
that was the arm, the robotic arm on the bomb drone.
I didn't understand your hand and arm signal there. I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah, you need to stop doing that.
What am I do? Walk like an Egyptian.
I thought I was an ostrich.
I was like,
so the EOD guys had their bombs.
Yeah, I thought it was an
robots.
Ostrich giving
like robotic T-Rex in the battlefield. Yeah, no, so EOD, the DoD contracted with iRobot, so there's your Roomba, right? And iRobot developed these robots specifically for going out and into environments where we thought it might go boom, so we would sacrifice the robot instead of a human being, and that was the first application that I'm aware of that we had a no kidding robot out in the battlefield.
How they call them bomb disposal robots when all they really do is detonate.
Yeah, they're most like poke that with a stick until it blows up, you know.
it's like
they're not clipping the blue wire.
It's like five. Yeah, that's what everybody pictures that I've talked to, like, you know, they really do. They picture that this robot is going in there very genteelly opening up a package and trying to find that blue wire.
So isn't it just cheaper to get a sniper to shoot the dang bomb?
Yeah, pretty much. Just fucking toss a grenade or two at it and just fucking
40 millimeter Cheeto round. I mean, it's enough concussive force. And
but no, they place the detonation charge or whatever strategically and get the shit out of there, the hell out of there, and blow that thing to hell. So, I mean, yeah,
there's been a lot of talk of robotics in the battle space, but again, we run into this problem that we run into with all technology is power. So the bomb disposal, you know, single use, you go out there, it's in operation for a couple of minutes, maybe an hour or two, and then, you know, they can go swap the batteries. It's not going to be in play in theater for long extended periods of time. And I think everything else they were looking at, and that was the big drawback with the Mule, was while the Mule was very versatile and could carry a lot of weight, they had to run a diesel engine on it because they couldn't run enough battery juice to keep it effective.
Well, I mean, it goes back to our big discussion with exosuits. You know, yeah, the power is going to be exactly what it is.
So whoever invents a fantastic battery is going to be making money with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, unless you have like a Rhino or a Humvee or something like that with a generator on the back that you're all tethered to running around, it's not really feasible. And even then, you're not going to be doing all that great a job tethered to a vehicle.
No.
You know, even if it's like an umbilical cord that you break off of and run off. I've actually seen that in, I think it was I can't remember what show it was here recently, but it was pretty decent. And I thought it was a pretty innovative and semi-realistic way to deal with the problem. Where they had the robots and things like that umbilical to a vehicle until they needed to break off, and then they can go off and deal with things on a short period of time.
I wish I remembered the name of the show, but it was pretty ingenious how they did it. You know, they could run off, do what they needed to, but again, they were only limited by the amount of power they had, and they had to get back to the vehicle. So,
I know in the Tom Cruise version of All You Need Is Kill, what was the cinema name of it? Live, Die, Repeat was the tagline, but yeah. Edge of Tomorrow. You know, I know they had to swap out battery packs a few times while they were in combat. So at least they addressed it somewhat, but you know, power seems to be the Achilles tendon of technology.
Yeah, and if you're talking about robotics, I mean, you're not just talking about the movement of the thing itself. You're also talking about the process power in which you're actually getting it to make the decisions and the quote-unquote cognitive abilities that go into all of that. So
that gets to the question that we were discussing earlier, Jay. Autonomous warfare. You know, when machines make the decisions to kill. And I don't know that there's any laws against it. I thought there were for a long time, and I looked it up, and it doesn't look like there are. There's no Geneva Convention-type agreement on that.
Well, you think about when the Geneva Convention was made. By the way, I have an opinion, too, Nate.
I know you do. But you weren't here for the earlier discussion. You stepped out to go get your drone.
But, the Geneva Convention was done when the first computer was essentially invented, or at least the first modern computer was invented, the Turing device.
Well, not just the Geneva Convention, but any treaty. There's no treaty that exists to define autonomous warfare. It's against military doctrine in the United States because of everybody's fears and concerns over Skynet or friendly fire incidents. But there's no international agreement not to develop those kinds of weapons. Well,
again, not to get too political about things nowadays, but who are we signing treaties with that we're currently at war with?
Right. Well, so it's not just a matter of treaty, it's also a matter of just international law, right?
Yeah, the UN, things along those lines, those governing bodies.
But has the UN published even a point paper?
No.
No,
and that book, Army of None, that I held up a minute ago, really goes in depth into all of this. There are a lot of groups, think tanks, companies, even the public sector, you know, government folks, publishing a lot and doing a lot of research around the ethics of AI, right? So it's pretty universally accepted right now. I think that while you could have something help you make a decision, it is unethical for that thing to make a decision for you that would result in the loss of life, limb, etc. So, I mean, if anybody listening to this or you guys are really interested in this subject as a whole, highly recommend that book because it goes very, very deep into all of these concerns.
I'll make sure I put that in the show notes.
Yeah, from the ethics of it to the actual laws of war to the histories, you know, the history behind it. Consequences of, you know, the morality or immorality, the whole nine yards.
So, yeah, I mean, I definitely don't know if I would trust AI if it's currently identifying, you know, through facial recognition and things along those lines, my cat as my son through, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that. Like, it's a lot of stuff's getting spoofed by photographs and stuff.
I mean, I'm purposely going out right now, and all those identify who this face is through Facebook and whatnot. I'm identifying myself as other people just to confuse the NSA and others, you know, just for knowledge.
Oh, so good to go. So when Facebook asks, is this a picture of Papa Bear and it shows a literal bear?
It's a literal
bear. I'll make sure
bear.
I say yes.
Or if it's possibly just a picture of
a hairy beaver,
possibly, or if it's a, you know, a
dead rotting beaver.
Yeah, you just keep on filling in the blanks for me. I'm just gonna say, yeah. I'm just gonna tag myself as that's me. Just posting random pictures. That's me. Right, Jay? Right, Jay? Yeah. That's how that works.
Confuse the machines.
Use the machines. Abuse the machines.
Well, every time somebody turns on a bot, it goes racist. You remember Microsoft had to kill one of their bots because the Twitter bot or something.
Oh god!
It ate all the stuff on Twitter and turned it into like a Hitler loving. Yeah. they killed it within like 2 hours. because everybody kept feeding it bad data, because people can't be trusted with, we can't have nice things because people.
Well, yeah, every time they go and turn on AI to scan mass, crowdsource data, you know, Twitter, the internet in general, or anything like that. They go totally rogue, trying to look up a couple of amazing ones right now, because I know there were a ton.
Oh, the bad bots that went crazy.
Yeah, the bad bots that went crazy.
So what is either one of you biggest fear with AI, machine learning, robotics, in the battle space, besides friendly fire incidents or Skynet?
Let's
skip the Skynet. We've all seen the movie, but like, what real world application disaster do you foresee? You know, money market manipulations, things like that. I think the more nefarious and realistic things will be the subtle things, like the Twitter bots that the Russians engineered to socially agitate America and get us all pissed at each other. I mean, they were invading everything with their social engineering bots, from politics to, you know, entertainment fan groups, just to get, you know, everybody agitated and not paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah,
that's been proven.
That's one issue, but I think that one example that really illustrates the power of that type of influence is one fake tweet from the White House can completely collapse our economy. You know, you want to take that and magnify that across multiple industries, multiple situations that maybe are generated autonomously based on a given set of criteria. Let's say a particular country is at a certain point of instability that's detected by some kind of a bot who's monitoring things like the climate, the current economic status, the political climate, open source news media, and all that. You got a bot that's monitoring all this, and they say, hey, country X is now at its lowest point. Now is the time to send out the tweet of all tweets, or now's the time to open up that Trojan that we planted, 5 years ago in this bank, or whatever. You know, now's the time to do X, whatever that tactic is.
Put that deep fake video out there.
Right. It could be as simple as that. But if you hit a target when it's at its weakest, and that weakest point can be determined, you know, through some type of an autonomous system that's scanning for things, and then that entire situation can be managed autonomously. I think that's a pretty scary thing, because then it don't matter if you've got AI that can pull a trigger. Countries are going to start pulling triggers at each other regardless.
So, I mean, with that said, do you even think we're going to have another conventional war ever again? Or do you think it's just going to be, we're going to be socially engineered to the point where we collapse into civil war?
No, I'm not going to say that. I don't think it's going to go to that, to civil war. I mean, you're talking about us against ourselves.
Wow.
But I think that, you know, we haven't technically had a conventional war in a very long time. You know, nation state versus nation state. I declare war, you know. We haven't had that in a long time.
World War II, Korea, and since then it's been proxy war.
That's a whole other discussion away from the topic.
Yeah,
but I would say when we talk about autonomy, we talk about drones, we talk about all this, I think that we have to really be careful, number one, to follow the right ethical path, but also recognize the fact that not everybody's going to. So how do we think like that without doing that, but think like that enough that we can prevent that to the maximum extent possible?
Sounds like that's what those think tanks are for.
Yeah.
Kind of scary and kind of depressing, kind of a bummer. do you think we're ever going to see things like Terminators, Man, or Chappie, or any of the, you know, robotic, humanoid robotic?
I think that a humanoid, a mechanical humanoid shape is impractical from a construction standpoint, a control standpoint, from a
giant battle scorpions.
I don't know. I don't know if I would agree with that.
Is there a psychological element?
There's a psychological
element. I think, like we said,
absolutely.
The psychological, well, I mean, think about it like this, because, I mean, we built the world to accommodate mm-hmm. us. Some of the biggest challenges that we have with robotics nowadays and human assistance type robots, let's go a different way with it, not necessarily warfare, but some of the biggest challenges today in human assistance type robots, like
sex robots.
Papa Bear's ready to punch me. You're being all serious and I throw out
God
sex
damn
bots.
It,
Mister, let's get back on track.
Yes, tentacle porn robots. Let's just get it. No,
incredible.
No, the masturbation robots that you find in Chinese hospital nowadays. Yes,
sperm collectors.
The sperm collectors. No, we're talking about, like, you know, the ones developed by the Honda Corporation, things along those lines. You know, some of the biggest challenges that they're actually trying to overcome and work with is how do they actually navigate in the space that we have developed. For ourselves, because
the world is designed to accommodate
us. You know, these robots are being designed to assist people who may have needs, whether they're handicapped or whatever, or they're just there to be daily assistance. The biggest challenges they have is the mobility through our spaces. Well, you know, I don't know necessarily agree if the human form type robots wouldn't be the ideal way to go, because again, those are the same challenges you need as a warfighter. I mean, what good is a treaded robot if you can't navigate stairs?
Here come the Daleks.
Let's run up the stairs, everybody. Oh shit. Sorry, Daleks.
Defeated by stairs
yet again.
Well, yeah, but
That's a
really good point, but, you know, back to Boston Dynamics, I mean, they've got that attachment that they stuck on their dog that can reach up and open doors, you know, opens a doorknob. Doorknob was another big one, right?
Right, but he can open the door, but he's also really long.
That's what she said.
If I push him, so if I go, right, but if I go around a corner or a narrow hallway, I make a quick 90-degree turn during it. Like around a narrow hallway, that dog's fucked.
Could be.
That was one of the big challenges, because they can't bring him into an actual CQB type fight.
Right.
He has to stay outside.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Like, hey, he's great to carry shit to me, to the fights, like
as a heavy weapons platform.
Yeah, he's great on the outside of the building. Or maybe even within the first room or two. He can navigate a doorway or two. But if we're going through narrow hallways or corridors or alleys.
Well, the same can be said with human beings. You don't clear the house with your heavy weapons guy.
I'm sure there have been people that have done some building clearing at 240s.
Yeah. But we were talking, me and Belly were talking that the other day, when we were talking about the smart guns and aliens. And they were actually leading the room clearing with the smart guns, which were very they had a hard time turning around tight corners and stuff.
They're like third or fourth guy in. They're like one of the last ones in.
And I know there have been people that have actually cleared some buildings in mount with 240s and stuff like that, but it's not practical. Okay, fine. Then let's end the show with tying it back into sci-fi.
Like the drones,
We talked
robotics a little bit, but like the drones, how did we tie that into any of the drones we see in sci-fi? Right.
So I will point, aquatic drones, if you ever watched SeaQuest DSV.
Yes, SeaQuest!
SeaQuest DSV, they had three aquatic drones that followed the ship around. They had a name, I forget what it was, acronym.
It's been so long
since
I've seen
that. They were little ball type things that floated around the ship and were forward sensors as cameras or whatever for the
ship. Never understood why they had lights. You couldn't see outside the SeaQuest. Could you see outside the SeaQuest? And why could you
for
see
the
outside?
Cameras. For the cameras, I would imagine it was lighting for the cameras. This was also the 90s, so they weren't probably... They were thinking...
I remember because in Norfolk, they had just opened Nauticus, which was like a huge maritime museum, and SeaQuest was like a big primetime show.
Nice.
And, like, them opening this big maritime museum, everything was fucking nautical. It's like, holy shit!
The Har- what was the, what was the, there was a big foundation, an aquatic foundation that like was always at the end of the show. They brought his, like, I want to say
was,
like a Hubbard.
It was Cameron's, because he was the guy who...
The Hullard or the Hubbard or something like that, the Hubbard Institute.
His name's Scott Cameron?
James.
Yeah, James Cameron?
James Cameron, thank you. James Cameron.
So, while well, other drones in sci-fi, any of the old sci-fi scrolling shooters had, you'd always pick up the power-up that had the little drones flying around your spaceship.
Hey, remember Metal Gear Solid? Yeah. They had the drone that would come in. I'm pretty sure it was Metal Gear Solid.
Well, there's a lot of the video games, like Modern Warfare and them, they have...
Right.
They bring the drones into the game. It's supposedly only like... I actually haven't played the series, but it's like 10, 15 years down the road. They've got exosuits. They've got the drones that they're throwing out there. You know, you don't really see a lot of robotics in Star Trek. I mean, Data, but, you know, other than Data, there's... There wasn't really a whole lot of robotics in Star Trek. Star Wars, obviously, had, you know, R2-D2, C-3PO, IG-88, HK-47, if you went into the old Republic repository there.
Now, I tell you what, that's one thing that I actually think would have a lot of utility is a repair droid.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, because that's right, R2-D2 was an astromech, so he was fixing the ship in the middle of combat.
Yeah, I mean, he technically would be, I guess, would be considered either a robot or a drone, either way. He auto-detects something is wrong with the ship.
I would say he was a robot, pure and simple. He had nobody remotely controlling him.
Right.
Drones are almost entirely remote-controlled to some degree, right? Or at least...
No, because, I mean, like I said, you know, we lose communication and things like that. Those are on autonomous programs.
Yeah, but it's got a very small set of subroutines that it follows until it gets communication back.
We could have made it, like, really complicated. We could have had it run an entire flight path. Yeah. You know, actually interacting.
Well, then it's a robot at that point.
I made a flying robot.
It's like a bird.
No, it's a fucking drone.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's something.
It's a drone. It's something.
It's a drone something. What other drones are there in sci-fi?
Don't run through the list like you don't care. Let's actually.
No, I'm thinking. I'm trying to think.
Let's make this part of the actual drone segment.
It is. I'm trying to think. What other drones do we see in sci-fi? We've seen a lot of sci-fi.
Well, I would argue that any of the probes,
any real world probes.
Yeah, any of the deep space
anal probes.
I guess it depends on their utility. I guess.
South Park's not really sci-fi.
God damn it, the aliens went in my butt.
There is science there. A satellite
dish coming in my ass.
Randy is a geologist. That is science.
Well, that first South Park episode of Cartman gets an anal probe. That was from aliens.
Hey, hold your gas and it'll cause spontaneous combustion. That's science.
Scott Baio gave me pink eyes.
And I have yet to see it being proved wrong.
One of the coolest applications of drones that I've seen recently in video games, for example. So I don't know, Papa Bear, if you got into playing Elite Dangerous at all, but there are you can land on different planetary bodies and moons and whatnot, and you can launch a little rover out of your spacecraft and drive around. Well, so on some of these planetary bodies, there are facilities that are guarded by autonomous drones. They're called skimmers. So you get missions to go destroy however many skimmers of this particular faction. And you go and you seek out these bases on these planets or moons that are guarded by these skimmers. And they're really cool. I mean, they look kind of like the parrot drones. They came out, they were like one of the first commercial available drones.
Right. I know exactly what you're talking about. Are you talking about the ground base or the
aerial ones that
The ones that had the
yes
bite.
Yeah so yeah. The the skimmers in this game kind of fly like that, but they don't use they're on non-atmospheric bodies, so they use like a repulsor type technology or something, I don't know, but they fly around, they're armed and they scan with lasers and everything, and that I always thought it'd be really cool to build something that was similar to that I could play around with here at the house. But again, with time, I haven't had a chance to mock one up or print it or do anything like that yet. But self or security, you know, having something that is sitting in a little cubby hole in my house,
and,
you know, somebody's walking around outside, that, you know, my sensors and my house can detect that. And all of a sudden, a little hatch pops open and my little skimmer flies out and is videoing this guy.
I've actually... I've actually tried something like that. It's a lot harder than it, yeah, than it seems, especially getting it to re-land and
right.
charge.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so you remember, what was it, Screamers or Scanners?
Scanners.
Was how was it? I want to say it was like an old John Carpenter flick where they had these little things crawl under the ground and then shoot up, and they were this autonomous, like basically robotic landmines that would scream at you before then they went looking for humans or whatever. Can't remember the name of the film. It was either Screamers or Scanner or something like that. I don't know. Somebody will correct me. Neither of you guys have seen it.
It's not Scanners because that was like the one with the head. The guy's head blows up. It was telepathic stuff.
I'm drawing a blank on that one is. And then, of course, Terminator. How could we forget Terminator?
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't started talking about some of like the Star Wars type, you know, drone probes.
So you have Viper, the one that Han and Chewie shot on Hoth, the probes that the Empire kept dropping. I mean, those were... those are robotic drones.
Right. You remember the
probes?
The one that she had in the single player campaign of.
Oh yeah, Iden Versio.
Yeah, she had that little back. Yeah. Yeah, it was a scaled down version of that, basically.
Right.
The Imperial Pro. I think it was the same company, Acloid or whatever their name is. I'm gonna go flog myself later for not remembering the name of the freaking.
Well, you should.
Floggable offense.
My Star Wars geek cred has decreased greatly over the years. I used to be able to name all that stuff, and I've had to replace that knowledge with, you know, important work stuff. Then you also had the, I was drawing a blank. I had another one, another good one from Star Wars. Oh, Darth Maul had his big round, things that with the dark eyes, the dark eye one or something like that, was the name of them. Skimming around Mos Eisley or Mos Espa looking for the Jedi. What other drones did we see in Star Wars? I mean, you got all the robots, but I wouldn't consider necessarily R2 or Gonk or any of those drones. I mean, those, in my definition, be straight up robots.
Here's one. Would you consider Soundwave's little buddy?
The cassette.
Rumble, Ravage, I mean, there were a ton of them. Laserbeak.
Right. Would you consider any of them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Drones?
I would, because he launched them.
They were a component system. They were component.
Well, he launched them, and he would give them a specific mission. Laserbeak, observe, you know, and Laserbeak would fly out.
Or were they pets?
No, I don't think they were pets.
Were they drones or pets?
No, they were robots. They were
or both?
I would consider them drones.
Jay's indecisive. He does not.
No, he's pretty determined.
Come on, Nate. What do you think?
I was not a big Terminator. I was not a big Transformers kid.
Obviously not. If you're talking about
G.I. Joe and Transformers, were not like my bread and butter as a kid was Robotech.
I'm sitting here playing with a Transformer as we speak.
I know. That's why.
I know. I Transformers, G.I. Joe, Teenage Mutant Turtles. I never really got into that stuff. I was Robotech. I was Star Wars. A lot of Star Wars, like even droids and Ewok cartoon stuff, or the Caravan of Courage Ewok movies. You know, I just never really got into Transformers. And Turtles was like after my time. I was like, my brother's a huge Ninja Turtles guy.
Yeah, the Ninja Turtles, the Mousers.
Oh yeah, no, Baxter Stockman's little
Mousers. Do you remember?
Okay,
those?
I do know a little bit about Turtles.
Those were drones. They were little robot mouths on.
They had like a round little body with chicken legs and a big square boxy head. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean they were basic. They were little nightmares on chicken bodies. but yeah, their whole mission in life was to chew through the sewer walls and find the turtles.
Not really sci-fi, but we'll call that geekdom.
It's science and it's fiction.
That's right. They had they were.
It's Baxter Stockman
that's
was
right,
a scientist.
They were mutated by radioactive waste. So
that's right. That's science.
But there's no military angle. Ninjas, yes, military, yes. that's a pretty fair survey of it. I can't think of too much more, and I'm sure just having a hard time thinking about drones in sci-fi. It's always gone straight to robotics.
Well, let's why don't we leave that as an exercise for the listener, and we'll see if we can get any comments or feedback on that, and we can do a follow-up.
Yeah, why don't we do all the work?
Yeah. Speaking of our listeners, we're going to do a quick roll call. Shout out to a couple of our fans. They can get all excited that they got named on the episode.
Are they fans or are they listeners? Are they listening just to point out our mistakes? I'm very self-conscious.
I think they are. So we're gonna call out four today.
Mom and dad. Yeah. Grandma, thanks for listening.
They told me they'd never listen.
Thank God. Just want my mom listening to every tentacle porn reference. So, you too can be listed on Roll Call if you let us know who you are. But these four folks I know have been pretty heavily involved from the get. Marcellus. I lost my list here. Here we go. Marcellus, Christian, Mark, and Darth Haley. Darth Haley actually works over at the Star Wars Report. We got a mention on their show. Both Haley and Riley are both Air Force guys. One's out, the other's in. But it is interesting. There are, you know, other podcasts out there with military sci-fi geeks out there. So good to go to everybody out there. That's the roll call. That's the first one.
Yep. And if since Nate is only listing first names, if your name is also Marcellus,
if you happen to have been born Marcellus, Christian, or Mark, that one's for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Even if you started listening after this date.
We knew you were coming.
Thank you. We knew you were coming.
We knew. We foresaw.
No worries. Next time, can we just make up names?
Oh, sure. Tom, Bob, Robert, Steve, and Susan.
Awesome.
Shout out to
last names with them, too.
Yeah. So we have a website. It's prpgpodcast.com. We're getting started working on content. Feel free to get in there. We got a pretty good message board started up. We'd love to get some user listener participation. And then real quick, Quartermaster shout out. Both Jay and I ordered the poster from Jeff Carlisle. Jay got his today. Mine may be waiting at home.
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's exactly as advertised. 16 by 20 inches. You know, it's not a massive poster by any means, but the print quality is great. I whipped it out. Was checking.
Sounds like a good size.
It'll be a good size for a frame. I'm probably gonna have it done with a mat and everything, so it looks pro. I went ahead and ordered two copies. I'm keeping one sealed up like the Constitution, so that when we do have the apocalypse, I'll have something I can teach children.
You can get stolen by Nick Cage. Nick Cage is gonna come steal
negative.
It from you.
Negative. No, it's, we have the apocalypse. I'll have something to teach future generations what they need to know.
You got anything you got recently or watch, saw, played? I did see Love and Robots, too, recently. Have you guys seen Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix?
Is that a Japanese cartoon?
It's a mix
actually,
of 3D.
A lot of them are from Hong Kong.
It's a mix of animation, 3D. There's two on there that are very military sci-fi. There's one that about, I think it's about werewolves in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And the other one is Lucky 13. It's a very pilot-oriented episode about a ship with Lucky 13 call sign, but it actually ends up...
I'll check it out.
That one's good. So
watch it with the kids in the house.
Yeah, don't. So, yeah, not child-friendly, but it is from a myriad of different artists, producers, and things, so there is no continuity from one show to the next, so it's not something that you have to watch sequentially or anything like that. If you don't like one, you can just go ahead and skip to the next one. There's no rhyme or reason to any of them. It's just, they're just shorts. You know, again, they are a compilation. It is a compilation from all over the world, so some of them have very, very big influences from other areas in the world. So it's really interesting, but they all have very significant themes in sci-fi, you know, robotics, and so on and so forth. It's a really great collection.
It's like the Animatrix in that variety of style, but it's not like the Animatrixes. There's no theme that ties them together, other than just weird sci-fi stuff.
But yeah, definitely rated R.
Good deal.
No tentacle porn, but plenty of other porn.
Yep.
Pornographic aspects. All right, that's it.
And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, go see your local Space Force recruiter. You know, got to protect the Earth because that's where America lives.
I'm sure our one Canadian, French, and German listener really will care.
America!
Well, you know what? America! France and Germany and Canada live here, too.
That's true.
That's right, but nobody cares about them. Protect Earth because that's where America lives!
All right, we're out here. We'll catch y'all next time.
Adios, nerds.
All right.
It's over, Anakin! I have the high ground!
This is it, baby.
Hold me. Legal disclaimer. We are just a bunch of a-holes that get together and discuss the things we love. We have no official affiliation with or in any way represent the DoD or any of the branches of uniformed service. Any intellectual property in audio clips or discussion is used for the purposes of review or parody and are all copyright the specific IP holders, all of whom are listed on our Reddit page or often in the show notes. Any issues can be addressed to our email via prpg.podcast@gmail.com. Background audio by Dragon Musician, entitled Moonlit Beach. Carry on, you filthy animals.
Yeah, well yeah, Marine Corps has no money. So,
touché.
You know, a really nice swingline stapler is a battalion-level asset.